So if we go away to our caves and we do these practices of shamatan, vipassana, focused on the mind, on stillness and the mind in movement, and we begin to accumulate experience. So it's so important just to, again, really realize how different what this project is of Dzogchen and Mahamudra, where you're trying to have a direct experience of the nature of the mind, as opposed to simply knowing the right answer, because you could be done with the whole project of understanding the nature of the mind by just reciting a few words and getting a tattoo that says non-dual luminosity and emptiness, and, you know, prove that you, you know, it's always there for you to consult. look in the mirror right on your forehead. But as you go away and really just do this, it's the process is important of direct investigation, settling into the state of the mind, of either the mind in movement or the mind in stillness, and going through the process of observing what it is that you see without preconception, without being too clever, and trying to impose your conceptual knowledge onto your experience. So what is it that you are actually experiencing? And as you wear out cushions, as Khandro Rinpoche said, you begin to accumulate experience. And this experience then is has the power and is going to accumulate into a transformation of the way that you view the world. And so what does the world look like then when you accumulate enough experience to actually transform your perception? I think that one of the most eloquent and concise expositions of that is actually what originally drew me to the, or really made me curious about the ninth karmapa in the first place. And this is what is the four recognitions, and what many of you are familiar with, because I've been using this as a template for Vipassana practice for a couple of years now. But this, I think, is so extraordinary because it really seems to me that it not only is a description of what it the world looks like, what the experience of reality is like when resting in pristine awareness, but it also seems to me to be a very precise template for how you can cut through to that pristine awareness. If you can integrate these four recognitions with your shamatha practice, basically doing a fusion of shamatha and vipassana, this seems like a very, very powerful method for cutting through to pristine awareness, and then it becomes a description of your experience while you are resting in pristine awareness. So let's go right to the four recognitions of Wangchuk Dorji, the ninth karmapa. He says, now, and this is a translation, this is actually Alan Wallace's translation from Spacious Path to Freedom, of the four recognitions. And this is the only citation of Wangchuk Dorji, I think, in that entire text. Now, all objective appearances are like water and waves. All are apparitions of the mind, and in reality are unestablished. By realizing this, one recognizes all appearances as the mind. So this is the first of the four recognitions. You recognize all appearances as the mind. By analyzing the essence of the mind in terms of going, staying, and arising, it turns out not to be established as anything. So, like horses and elephants in a dream, it is unestablished in reality. By realizing this, one recognizes that the mind is empty. So far you have all appearances are mind, but that this mind that appearances are appearing to is empty. And then, from the state of emptiness, clarity and limpidity, in unceasing great joy, so this is basically non-conceptuality, luminosity, and bliss, from resting in that state, it spontaneously arises as manifold appearances, like the moon's reflections in water. By realizing this, one recognizes emptiness as spontaneous actualization. Thus, from simple spontaneous actualization arising and release occur spontaneously, without wavering from immutable great bliss that is clear, empty, spontaneous, and free of elaboration, like a snake that unravels its own knots. By ascertaining this, one recognizes spontaneous actualizations as self-liberating. So the first of these points is pointing out that all appearances are mind. And this is exactly what the Buddha was talking about in the Perfection of Wisdom in 20,000 Lines when he said, a bodhisattva reviews all phenomena as similar to an apparition, a dream, a mirage, an echo, an image, a reflection of the moon and water, a magical creation, a village of the sprites. Even nirvana, I say, is like a dream, like an illusion. If I could apprehend any phenomena more exalted than nirvana, of that also I should say that it is like a dream, like an illusion. The Lord has said that dream and waking are indistinguishable. Ultimately, all phenomena are like a dream. And so all appearances are mind. And this gets really challenging when you realize that all appearances are not just internal appearances of thoughts, images, memories. Those we can take to understand that, well, of course, those are appearances within the mind. Those are clearly mind. But all phenomena, all appearances are mind. So he says not only internal appearances, but also appearances of so-called external phenomena as well. These are mind. So what does that mean? What you come to realize in when you wear out the cushions and accumulate experience is that there's a two-step process going on in our perception of external appearances. There is the first moment of what we would just call sensory perception, which Yangtang Rinpoche said, usually that first moment, that's okay. It's not unmistaken. It's not deluded. You know, it's just pure sense perception. But almost instantly following on that is then what happens with the sixth consciousness, primary consciousness. We have the five primary consciousness of the five senses, and then we have the sixth mental consciousness. So the sixth mental consciousness gets involved almost immediately with sense impressions and then creates a replica of the sense impression, which is an abstraction, a conceptualization, and then projects that back onto the so-called external appearance out there so that it becomes a conflation of conceptuality and perception. Concept and percept become one as they are projected onto what seems to be an external thing. And we take that then to be the truly existent external thing appearing independently of my mind. And that thing then appears with all of the qualities. It appears to me to have all of those qualities that I have projected onto it. And we just never question that. So here he is saying all appearances. So the green of the grass, it's so clear to cognitive philosophers, to physicists, the green of the grass is not in the grass. Where does it exist? The green of the grass only exists in the mind. that in the mind, in as I am experiencing it. So all appearances are mind, radical. Can we actually have a direct experience of that? And His Holiness has said about this, that not satisfied with mere appearances of phenomena, we grasp onto them as inherently real. So there'd be no problem if we were just satisfied with appearances appearing as appearances and, you know, and just leave it at that. But we now conflate and mistake, and in a deluded way, we take this conflated appearance to be truly existent, independent of my mind. And then we give that appearance a power to disturb my mind by either being a cause of my happiness or my unhappiness. This thing that is outside of my mind being a cause of a state of mind. It just doesn't make sense, but that's the way that we take the world to be. So once we understand that all appearances are mind, then as Gyatro Rinpoche said, once you recognize that all appearances are of the mind, there is a tendency to reify the mind. To counteract that, you must further investigate the nature of the mind, and by so doing, you will find that the mind that seems so real is in fact empty. It is empty of any essence. It is empty of any intrinsic nature. And you could continue to say, it is empty of any substantial characteristics that we have been looking for. And this is exactly what we have been doing. So the first of these, all appearances are mind, is actually really practiced as a Mahamudra practice. So first of all, there are five actual bundles of practices in pointing out the Dharmakaya. Pointing out the mind in stillness, pointing out the mind in movement, pointing out the mind in appearances is the third one, or it's one of those. It comes a little later. Pointing out the mind in movement, pointing out the mind in stillness and movement. So that's basically what we did, comparing the mind in stillness and movement, the last episode that we just did. And now pointing out the mind in appearance, where you now are looking at the appearance rather than the mind to which appearances are appearing, but appearances themselves, even the thing, the sense objects of sound, of sight, these themselves are nothing but mind. So the temptation then is to say, well, mind is the sovereign, the all-creating sovereign. So the mind is the only thing that is real, the only thing that is absolute, that is concrete, the mind which is creating all of these appearances. So then we do the meditations that we did to find the mind in stillness and the mind in movement. And do we find any substantial characteristics there? Is the mind real in a substantial way? It exists in some way, but does it have any substantial existence? And we find that the mind is empty of any substantial characteristics. And then the third is the recognition of emptiness as spontaneous presence or spontaneous actualization. And this, then, is the really amazing recognition that emptiness is not nothingness, or it is not a sheer absence. So when you look, what does the emptiness of the mind mean? Does it mean that nothing, that there is no mind there whatsoever? That there, the mind is only an unawareness? Or when you recognize emptiness of mind, is there an unawareness that results? Does the mind disappear? Does awareness disappear when you recognize the emptiness of the mind? Or do you recognize that mind actually doesn't, the emptiness of mind doesn't mean that there's nothing, a sheer vacuity, but it means that there is a potentiality of everything? That the emptiness of mind actually means that this plenum of pure potentiality, so that, in fact, you could say that the emptiness of mind is not nothingness, but it is spontaneous actualization. And so out of this, what is called the absolute space of phenomena, with Dharma Dhatu, empty space, out of this arises all phenomena, all appearances of mind arise out of this emptiness, and it is the emptiness of this absolute space of phenomena that makes all appearances possible. So all appearances are empty, or all appearances are mind. Mind is empty. But this emptiness of mind is spontaneous actualization. And then the fourth is that spontaneous actualization is self-liberation. And so this has a couple of different meanings. Gyatro Rinpoche in Spacious Path to Freedom commented that because the actualization is spontaneous, that the release is spontaneous as well. And so that there is no, you don't basically spontaneously create something that has concrete existence then that lasts and becomes an independent autonomous entity. So it self-releases as well. But the way that Trungpa Rinpoche glosses this in his commentary on this text, and he's the world expert on this text. He's the tutor of the 17th Karmapa. Trungpa Rinpoche said that really what this means is the recognition that, so you might have the thought, because the mind is continually spontaneously actualizing out of emptiness all appearances, does that mean that my mental afflictions also will spontaneously arise as well? Because everything is spontaneously arising. And so Trungpa Rinpoche says that no, because when you recognize the nature of these appearances, then they self-release. And so he says it is not the actual nature of appearances themselves to self-release, because we know that some appearances have the power to, we reify them, and some appearances seem to be have the power to create mental afflictions. So the mentally afflicted and reified appearances don't self-release, but the appearances release when we recognize their nature, and then they lose their power to be self-afflicting or to be afflictions for us. And it is in the recognition then, that is the important thing, it is not the nature of the appearances to self-release, but it is the recognition of the nature of the appearances that causes them to self-release. And then, very briefly, Gyatro Rinpoche in his commentary to this in Spacious Path to Freedom says, as paradoxical as it may seem, non-conceptual realization of emptiness, so a direct perception of emptiness, can be sustained in the midst of conceptualization. So this is really powerful, because you can be resting in knowing the nature of all appearances as conceptualization is appearing to you. So you're not fooled by the conceptualization. So it's as paradoxical as it seems, a non-conceptual realization of emptiness can be sustained in the midst of conceptualization, but the caveat, but only if the nature of mind itself has been realized. So once you recognize the empty nature of mind, then all of the conceptualization that arises doesn't have the power to basically destroy your resting in the non-conceptual experience of emptiness. So once you recognize and you're resting in emptiness of mind, then appearances, the conceptualizations, also you can have a non-conceptual experience of those. And then finally, In the pith instructions on the clear expanse, cited again in Spacious Path to Freedom, it states, in this ineffable reality, free of elaboration, by simply not impeding its radiance, everything appears. Know that the essence of appearances is empty, without an object and free of intellect. Not being separated from that reality is called vividness. So this is, if you have wondered, what is the experience of vividness? Whenever vividness is talked about as a quality of your concentration or of your awareness, as an antidote to subtle laxity, what is this vividness? It is a recognition of the nature of appearances in the instant that they are arising. So this is what we would like to do in this next meditation, to try to vividly rest in a shamatha practice, basically of taking dujam lingpas, taking aspects of the mind as the path, meaning that we are watching appearances arise without grasping on to them, without being distracted by objective appearances, without identifying with subjective appearances, impartially watching these appearances without preferring that they be different. So strictly shamatha practice. But then we are going to vividly add the four recognitions, so that as these appearances arise, they vividly appear to us in the moment that they are appearing. Their nature appears to us. What is their nature? All appearances are mind. And so what could be easier than that, really? Because we're actually watching the mind. We are resting in the mind. We are simply, and all of these appearances then, it becomes very clear to us. These appearances are appearances of mind. And then mind is empty. You basically just recall that the experience that you've accumulated doing the meditations on the nature of the mind in stillness and the mind in movement, that there are no substantial characteristics that can be discovered. The mind is empty of those. But that emptiness then, the third recognition, that emptiness is not just a nihilistic nothingness. It is the pure display of mind itself. The absolute space of phenomena, mind itself, is displaying one of its qualities. You're witnessing the luminosity in these appearances of emptiness. And then watch these appearances spontaneously, as because you have recognized their nature, they spontaneously self-release. So let's find a comfortable position. And I think for this meditation, we will just, because I have gone on, run past my limit here, this will just be a 24-minute meditation, and part of it will be guided. So I will guide about the first 12 minutes, and then we will continue. The deeper you go in these practices, the more important is this first preliminary of settling the body, speech, and mind in their natural states. We stop identifying with the unnatural states of tension, constant chatter, and a deluded mind as being natural. And we discover the natural state of the body. Non-conceptual. Relaxed, at ease. And still. And discover the effortless silence of the mind settled in its natural state. And discover the contentment with that silence that goes with this natural state, rather than filling compulsively every moment of silence with plans and distracting thoughts. Be content with the silence. And then settle the mind in its natural state. The moment-to-moment presence of luminous cognizance, knowing, yet empty of substantial characteristics. This mind that is able to illuminate appearances without becoming them. And as you rest in the stillness moment to moment, you will inevitably recognize the mind in movement as thoughts, mental appearances, images. The Mahasiddha Maitripa said, whatever thoughts arise, virtuous or non-virtuous, steadily and non-conceptually observe their nature. So in the instant that an appearance arises, not only are you aware of its appearance in the space of the mind, can you also be aware of its nature? Wangchuk Dorje describes this as the recognition that all appearances are mind. not only internal appearances, but even the appearances of so-called external objects. How do they exist? Those appearances of things you see, of those things you hear. Where does that appearance occur? Those appearances also, our mind. All appearances are mind. Not only objective appearances, but the subjective appearances that seem to be a quality of awareness itself. Desires, longings, liking or disliking, the way that you seem to view objective appearances. Those as well. Simply another display of the luminous quality of mind itself. Like a temporary cloud formation in a blue sky. Can you vividly recognize the nature of the thought, the appearance, in the instant that it arises? This is vividness. It requires great vividness. And it produces great vividness. All appearances are mind. But does that mean that mind alone is real? Has a true existence? Can you find any substantial qualities at all to either the mind in stillness or the mind in movement? Vividly recognize in the instant that appearances arise, all appearances are mind. Mind is empty. What do you discover when your mind is at rest and you observe its nature? A space-like emptiness. Of substantial characteristics that would mark it as a thing. This mind itself is as insubstantial as a dream. But does this mean, this emptiness of the mind, does this mean that it is nothing? That when you look at the mind, there is nothing there. There is no experience. Or even in the absence, the emptiness of substantial characteristics, do you experience this quality of luminosity, the mind's capacity to know? Wangchuk Dorje says, recognize all appearances as mind, mind as emptiness. And then recognize the emptiness of the mind as spontaneous actualization. These appearances are temporary crystallizations of the empty space, the empty nature of the mind. All these appearances, in their essence, are nothing other than displays of the luminous nature of the mind. And then recognize all these displays of spontaneous actualization as self-liberating. They spontaneously arise, and when you see their nature, they self-liberate. So as you are resting in this shamatha practice, with your mind in stillness, and then appearances arise. With the same moment of awareness that is resting in stillness, can you not only know the appearance of this display, but know its nature? All appearances are mind. Mind is empty. Emptiness is spontaneous actualization. Spontaneous actualization is self-liberation. It's said in Dzogchen that the difference between a samsaric sentient being and a Buddha is that a Buddha knows who they are. This emptiness of the mind that you recognize is Dharmakaya. The luminosity of the mind that you recognize is Sambhogakaya. And all of these spontaneous displays of non-dual emptiness and luminosity is Nirmanakaya. Now you know who you are, your own Buddha nature, apparent in every appearance and every recognition. Well, if these practices of Dzogchen and Mahamudra are as exhilarating for you as they are for me, we can all go off to our caves now for the winter and have plenty to practice. So that's what I intend to do. I feel so lucky that for the first time in a couple of years now, I have the whole winter at home. And so, God, last year at this time, I was just setting off for Italy and then on to 3 months in India and then back for a short time and then back to Italy again and then British Columbia. And then it was about 18 months of pretty much a lot of travel anyway in 18 months. So this winter, I'm going to be at home on Marble Road and just practicing this, going to my cave, really, for not exclusively, but most of what I'm going to be doing is exactly this, because I have a choice, doing anything I want to do. So there'll be, you know, some daily exercise and all that I'll choose to do also, but mostly it's going to be study and meditating. So I feel so fortunate to be able to do that, and I hope that you'll have an opportunity to do as much as you choose to do as well. I know not everybody is as fortunate as I am in that regard, but I hope that, anyway, maybe your holidays will place some extra time under your tree. You know, Santa will deliver a retreat for you of some length and some duration. Anyway, thank you all so much for coming out today and for the last 5 weeks giving me the opportunity to go into these practices because I have to try to have some comprehension of what these practices are and put them into my own practice and then try to do my best to convey something that I've learned to you. So I'm none of that would happen without you. So I am very grateful for your coming. And I hope that on the other side of winter in February that we'll see you again.